Chapter 9, Life and Death. While the sad news of Beth had put a dark cloud over the March house, things in Europe were looking as bright as ever. In the mid-afternoon, all of the fashionable world of Nice, France, could be seen walking along the Promenade des Anglais. It was a lovely place, for the walk was bordered on one side with palm trees, flowers, tropical shrubs, and the sea, while the other side was lined with beautiful hotels and villas. On Christmas Day, along this walk, a tall young man walked slowly. He looked like an Italian, was dressed like an Englishman, and had the independent manner of an American. There were many pretty faces to admire on the walk, but the man didn't notice any of them. His attention was soon interrupted with the sound of a horse approaching. Inside the little carriage was a single lady with blonde hair dressed in blue. The man stared at her for a minute. Then his whole face lit up, and he hurried forward to meet the lady. It was none other than Miss Amy March. "Laurie, is it really you?" cried Amy when she saw him. "Sorry I'm late, but I promised to spend Christmas with you, and here I am. Where are you staying?" "At the Chevron. I went to see you at your hotel last night, but you were out." "I have so much to say, and I don't know where to begin," said Amy. "Get in the carriage, and we can talk as much as we like before tonight's party." "Is there a ball?" "Yes, a Christmas party at our hotel. You'll go with us, I hope." "Thank you, I'd like that," replied Laurie with a big smile. Amy and Laurie spent the day together and enjoyed each other's company very much. She found him more handsome than ever, but also very grave. He was changed in many ways, and she couldn't see in him the merry boy she left at home. Time and absence had done their work on both the young people. Amy had seen her old friend as a handsome and agreeable man, and she was suddenly conscious of a natural desire to show him her strong points. The night of the Christmas ball, Amy made more of an effort to look her best for Laurie. She waited for him in the saloon before the party, but did not hear him when he entered. "Good evening," said Laurie, with a look of satisfaction that Amy enjoyed seeing in his eyes. "Good evening to you," she answered, smiling back at him. The thought of entering the ballroom on the arm of such a pleasant man caused Amy to blush a little. That night, Amy danced not only with Laurie, but with many other gentlemen. She danced with spirit and grace and altogether impressed Laurie. Before the evening was over, he had decided that little Amy was going to make a very charming woman. Amy and Laurie chatted during supper, and afterward, Amy did not know why he looked at her so kindly or why he asked her to dance with him for the rest of the evening. It was an agreeable change, and it was the result of new impressions which both of them were giving and receiving, whether they knew it or not. Laurie ended up staying in Nice for a month, even though he originally intended to stay for just a week. He was tired of wandering around alone. Amy's familiar presence made him feel at home in a foreign place. They naturally took comfort in each other's company and were together often, riding, walking, dancing, or relaxing. While they were enjoying each day spent together, they were also making discoveries and forming opinions about each other. Each day, Laurie's opinion of Amy grew stronger. She tried to please people and succeeded. Laurie, on the other hand, made no effort of any kind. He just let himself drift along. He had become lazy, and both he and Amy knew it. One day, they took a drive together so Amy could sketch some outdoor scenery. They stopped at a beautiful spot and wandered around among the summer roses that blossomed everywhere. "Laurie, when are you going to your grandfather in Paris?" Amy asked him, after putting a rose in his buttonhole. "He expects you, and you should really go." "I'll go soon, I suppose, but I'll only annoy him. I'd rather stay here and annoy you," he said, smiling. "What would Joe say if she saw you?" Amy asked impatiently. "As usual, go away, Teddy, I'm busy." He laughed as he spoke, but the laugh was not natural. Amy caught a bitter look on his face. Amy began her drawing. As she was sharpening her pencil, she looked at Laurie lying on the grass and said, I have a new name for you. It's Lazy Lawrence. How do you like it? Amy thought it would annoy him, but he simply put his hands under his head and said, That's not bad. Do you want to know what I honestly think of you? Amy then asked him. Do tell. Well, I despise you. And why is that? Because with every chance for being good, useful, and happy, you are faulty, lazy, and miserable, replied Amy. Strong language, Miss March. You've been abroad for 6 months now, and all you've done is waste time and money and disappoint your friends. Isn't a fellow allowed to have some pleasure after 4 years of study? I thought you had improved, but I was wrong. You've grown lazy. You like gossip and waste time on silly things. You are content to be admired by foolish people instead of being loved and respected by wise ones. You have money, talent, health, and beauty, but you can find nothing to do but dawdle. You should be spending your time trying to become the man you ought to be. Amy's lecture began to take effect, for Laurie now had a sparkle in his eye. I know I have no right to talk to you this way, Laurie, Amy continued, but we are all so fond and proud of you at home. I couldn't bear to think that those at home should be disappointed in you as I have been. When Amy finished her sketches, the two of them returned to their hotels. Amy knew she may have offended Laurie, but she also knew that he needed to hear what she had to say. She wouldn't take back a word of it. The next morning, instead of the usual call from Laurie, Amy received a note which made her smile at the beginning and sigh at the end. In his letter, Laurie said that he had gone off to see his grandfather. Good boy, I'm glad he's gone, said Amy to herself with an approving smile. But I will miss him. Throughout this same time, those at the March house were getting by as best they could. The family had accepted that Beth would die soon, so they put away their sadness and each did their part toward making her last days happy ones. The most pleasant room in the house was set apart for Beth, and in it was gathered everything that she loved, flowers, pictures, the piano, and the dear cats. The favorite things of her other family members found their way into the room as well. The first few months were happy ones, and Beth would look around the room and say, How beautiful this is, as they all sat together in the room. Meg and John had twin babies now, Demi and Daisy. Beth kept them near whenever she could. Her mother, Meg, and Joe worked near Beth's little bed, and her father read to her from his old books. As the days passed, Beth's pain grew worse. As her body became weaker, her soul grew stronger. She didn't say much, but her family knew that she was ready to go soon. Joe never left Beth for more than an hour and slept on the couch in the room, waking to stir the fire, to feed, lift, or wait on little Beth, who rarely asked for anything. The spring days came and went. The sky grew clearer, the earth grew greener, and the flowers and birds came back to life just in time to say goodbye to Beth. With tears, prayers, and loving hands, mother and sisters made Beth ready for the long sleep that pain would never harm again. Those who have sat by the beds of family or friends in the last hours know that to most, the end comes as naturally and simply as sleep. So it was with Beth. In the dark hour before dawn, lying in her mother's arms, she quietly drew her last breath. She spoke no words. With one loving look and a little sigh, she was gone. That morning, for the first time in many months, the fire was put out in Beth's room. Everything was very still and quiet. Beth's face was full of painless peace, and those that loved her best smiled through their tears, and were happy that Beth was well at last among the angels.